It's time for What's Up with Green Party co-leader Marama Davidson.
Morena, Marama Davidson, how are you this morning?
Morena, I'm really good, thank you.
It's good to be able to chat to you. We've got some big topics to talk about. COP26, of course. We've also got COVID being the other big thing at the moment, talking a little bit about some of the vaccine mandates coming into effect next week for teachers. But let's start with COP26. James Shaw, your co-leader of the Greens Party, along with yourself, is over in Glasgow at the moment, and we're getting down to the quite nitty-gritty part of negotiations. What is he going to be focusing his attention on?
Yeah, he's pretty busy over there at the moment. So there's a key role for James that he's taking to the climate summit right now in Glasgow, and so co-chairing negotiations to sort of support in other countries reducing their emissions, under the Paris Agreement, which is something that we've signed up to, I guess, is just a sort of a collective agreement for countries to do their bit in reducing emissions and protecting the climate. And so being able to chair that is a really important role for us as Aotearoa New Zealand as well. That's a part of it, but I suppose at COP we've also signed up to what is called the International Just Transition Declaration. And that's really just, again, keeping countries accountable to a way that they sort of respond to the climate crisis, making sure that it's fair for everyone. And, you know, the principles of a just transition is right at the core of all of our action that we need to take, because what we've seen is climate change itself and the action of exploitative and extractive industry around the world has not created fair and equitable impacts for everybody, both the wealth and the spoils and the benefits of the fiscal and financial and other benefits of those industries is not distributed and is not fair to everyone, but also the negative impacts of, you know, high emission industries often, and the result of climate change, extreme weather impacts, ecological and environmental impacts of extreme weather, etc., impacts on particular communities the most, and, you know, that those harms are not fairly distributed. So keeping a global conversation on a just transition is really important as well.
Speaking of those high emissions industries, there has been, you know, long a conversation about the complications of having such a focus on the dairy industry here in Aotearoa. Mm. And there's some reports that could be holding us back from perhaps living up to some of the targets we've set, or some of the targets and conversations happening in COP26 right now. Do you think that is an issue for us in the present moment?
Yeah, absolutely. And we've also just joined the Global Methane Pledge to reduce global methane emissions. And that, you know, is a big part of the agricultural industry emissions. And in order to achieve that limit of warming to, you know, no more than 1.5 degrees Celsius, pledges like the Global Methane Pledge and how we make sure we deliver on that is a focus on the agricultural and methane emission actions and industries that we're certainly, you know, a part of in our economic system, I suppose, in Aotearoa. And that alone is estimated to reduce warming by at least 0.2 degrees Celsius by 2050. So it's here in Aotearoa, we've pretty much sort of half and half. Transport and agriculture are the biggest sort of carbon and climate emission polluting activities, and so we've certainly got some work to do in all of our sectors, but we cannot ignore the agricultural sector as well.
We're only seeing a tiny 10% where other of our methane emissions cutting. We're seeing from other countries up to something like 30% by 2030. Is this enough for us to actually achieve these goals?
No, and across the board, you know, we've actually got to do more. And I think the Climate Change Minister, James Shaw, has been really, really clear when we sort of released the emissions reduction draft plan. It's really clear that there's more that needs to be done, and the plea is for the people, for communities to actually help keep creating that mandate for our government to do more and to pull more of the levers that it has available to it. So, you know, being able to support a transition to a far more sustainable way of farming, one that also protects our soil health and our water health better, as well as reduces our methane emissions in particular. Just, I think it was in the weekend, my colleague Tiano Tuiono and also Eugenie Sage, for example, have been holding forum and discussions around communities for farming for the future. What does it look like? What do we need to change? And what support can government provide to, you know, to allow us this transition in the way that we have farmed for a long, long time now? We've got to move away. We've got to move away from sort of intensive methods of farming, and we've got to move away from some of the sort of synthetic fertilisers and nitrogen fertilisers that we rely on in our industry as well. So, how, you know, what are the supports that we need to be able to support farmers to sustain their living in a far better way?
Now, I do want to talk a wee bit about some changes we're seeing in our COVID rollout in just a minute, but I did want to get your thoughts on if we're doing enough, particularly at COP26 at the moment, to support our Pacific nation counterparts who have, you know, smaller nations but bigger problems or more immediate problems with the climate crisis. Are we doing enough as a country to be supporting what they are asking for at COP26?
I think we're showing a leading way as Aotearoa in terms of what also other countries around the world should be doing in directly assisting Pacific nations, particularly those countries who are, you know, who have been exploiting Pacific nations around the world. And we have done that too ourselves. We've got that same legacy. So it's good that we, across all of our emissions reduction planning, it's good that we're including our support directly to Pacific nations. And there's always more that we and other countries in the world can be doing. There has been some criticism that far too much of our carbon emission sort of plan at the moment is not focused domestically enough, and that's the agricultural emissions in particular that you've raised. And so, you know, we do want to prioritise our domestic reductions rather than just buying up sort of carbon sort of tickets, I suppose, carbon reduction tickets from other countries, but actually directly helping our Pacific nations with their renewable clean energy, with their solar energy networks, for example, you know, is actually really important and something that I think many countries of the world owe as a responsibility to our Pacific nations.
Well, let's talk a wee bit about COVID now, the other big existential crisis of the day, climate change and COVID. We have got some big changes happening here in Tāmaki Makaurau. Today, everybody will have woken up to Alert Level 3, Step 2. We're also going to be seeing some big changes next week in terms of certain vaccine mandates coming into effect, particularly one in the spotlight at the moment is teachers. And we have seen some reports from some isolated rural communities where you're going to have some potential shortages in teachers who are not wanting to get vaccinated in time for that mandate to come into effect next week. Is enough support being given to these small communities where perhaps there is a bit more misinformation around, or there is a little bit more hesitation towards vaccination at the moment? Do you think enough support is being targeted at the right places?
Not yet. We haven't yet, I think, given enough support. And, you know, understanding, I mean, I am connected, for example, closely to small rural and isolated communities, both in Hokianga and the East Coast. The vaccination rates in our regional communities are quite horrendous, and particularly in my Tai Rāwhiti and Hokianga communities, it's really worrying how low the vaccination rates are, how high the mistrust is for public health mandates, I suppose. And so the work to resolve and move people through the unfortunate misinformation and disinformation that is often targeting those isolated and rural communities is going to take lots of resources, going to take time and literally one-on-one enduring conversations, is going to take more groundwork and information. You know, when we talk about resources, we should include information and data in the resource. I'm talking with my Hokianga sort of community on a sort of almost daily basis at the moment. One of the things their local hospital is asking for is data, you know, to be able to do this mahi, to be able to know exactly what is going on in their very own community. And so, no, I do not think that we are properly funneling the resource and the authority to those communities in a way that is needed. Some of our hardest to reach places are really having to struggle through this work at the moment.
While we work through that period of trying to get the support to the right places, how do you think we should be supporting those communities that are going to perhaps see some of the adverse effects of having that misinformation? So I'm thinking about these small schools, for example, where they're going to potentially have teachers who can't come into the classroom. You know, kids are going to miss out. Also, we want kids to be safe, though, so we want vaccinated teachers in the classroom. So it's a balancing act. But how do we support those communities to ensure that, you know, we're not seeing students miss out on the education?
Yeah, and I think the first step is all of the vaccination programs and all of the responses, including what is going to happen for schools, needs to be led and done with the community. So that's the very first step, is are we making sure that we are connecting public health programs, public health agencies and officials properly and directly with those small communities, to be able to sit down and say, hey, okay, we've got a bit of a challenge here. What is it, firstly, what is it that we need to do to resolve what is behind that school? I heard the interview with the principal. What is behind that school and the staff still not being able to make a public health decision? And then secondly, while we do that work, what is it that you need? How can we resolve and make sure that we're, you know, that access to education for those tamariki and e whānau is still going to be available? So, you know, that I think has to be led and done with the community, and every community will have different solutions to those very problems.
Well, thank you so much for your time this morning, Marama Davidson. It's always great to chat to you on the show. We'll talk to you again in a few weeks. I'm sure there'll be plenty more to chat about then as well. So thanks for your time.
Thanks for having me, Rachel. Look forward to talking again. Kia ora.
Kia ora. Ka kite.
That was What's Up with Green Party co-leader Marama Davidson.
Thank you.